Welcome to Hot Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction industry, covering everything from your big mega haunts to your home haunts. Whether you're an owner, actor, or just plain aficionado, we hope to be the podcast for you. And we're back for another week, as per the show title. And we've got a bit of a difficult topic this week.
This one really should have been covered in the ethics one.
Yeah, immediately after the last one. We should have done this. But you know what? The ethics one was such a downer. Taking a break to talk about, you know, something that, I mean, okay, yeah, the worst haunt you've ever been to. Not super lighthearted, but, you know, it's not talking about, you know, stuff that is overtly depressing.
Right.
Yeah, this week we are covering Hell Houses.
Back to the dark side.
Yes, indeed. Now, before we begin, we jump into this, want to say that we're not bringing our religious views into this.
No.
In fact, we're going to work very hard to keep our personal views out of this conversation. But Hell Houses are a very important phenomenon in this industry, and they are something well-deserving of an hour of our time to talk about on this podcast. And thus, I think, an hour of your time to listen to us.
Yeah.
So, but before we jump right into this topic, we do actually have some conference notes.
Ooh, conferences.
Yes, we actually have several conferences to talk about. Well, we have three that we're going to talk about. Which three is several. Don't laugh.
It's more than one or two.
Indeed. First off, reminder, Chicago Frights will be July 29th through 31st at Orland Park, Illinois at the Giorgio's Quality Inn and Suites. More information, tickets, prices, all that jazz, check out chicagofrights.com.
Yes.
Also, if you are West Coast, West Side, you can check out Scare LA, and that's all one word if you're going to Google this.
Right.
It is August 6th and 7th. It's only a two-day conference, and it'll be at the Pasadena Convention Center, and guess where? Pasadena. I really could have, like, thrown you off if I just said, you know, like, New York!
yeah, you could have.
Yeah. It is at scarela.com. They recently announced that Elvira is hosting this event. 2 days of time with Elvira. That's a fantasy of mine from way back when.
It's right around your birthday.
I know. And also, the people behind McCamey Manor have said that they will be there. Usually fairly reclusive group there. They will actually be attending Scare LA.
Yeah. So. And isn't this a new conference?
Yes, I believe it is a new conference.
Okay. I thought I had read that somewhere. That's a brand new conference. Yeah. Yay!
And it's weird because we've talked about on this show before about how there's not a lot of conferences on the West Coast for haunters.
Right.
You got Midwest covered. You got South covered with HauntCon. You got a couple in the Northeast.
Right.
But you don't get a lot of West Coast action, it seems. This is good. This is a good thing. I am happy about this. And like I said, Elvira hosting, bringing some name cred into it. And Elvira's, looking, judging from promo video, still looking quite nice, I must say. Still quite pleasing to observe. So yeah, check that out. Once again, scarela.com, August 6th and 7th, Pasadena Convention Center. And finally, I have no idea when they announced this because they didn't put a flipping date on it. And it's not on their Facebook. It's not anywhere else.
But so this, maybe they need some marketing tips.
Maybe they need something. But the National Haunters Convention and Halloween Show, formerly one of the bigger conferences, is relaunching in May 2017. They skipped 2015. They skipped 2016. They will be relaunching in 2017.
Yep.
And, you know, it's interesting. We're not the biggest industry on the planet, obviously.
Yeah.
That would, but we have a lot of really great conferences for an industry. You know, you hear like dentists get like two or three really big conferences every year and stuff.
Yeah.
Usually here in New Orleans.
Is there an international haunters convention? Because there should be. We should be able to go outside the country.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we can do more to get Halloween and haunting popular in other countries...
It's taking off.
It is.
We talked about it.
We did. It really is. It's true. She's right. It's taking off. It's gaining ground. And absolutely, positively, there's no reason why there should not be an international convention. If not now, then soon.
Yes.
I completely agree with you. But yeah, those are the three conferences we wanted to talk about. It was really weird because... I learned about the National Haunters Convention when I was doing the show notes. I just happened to swing by their site on a lark. So yeah. I had just like on a lark. And they're like, oh yeah, we're relaunching in 2017. Like, when the hell did you announce that? I have no idea. I mean, in...
Right then. Right before you came there, they announced it.
Yeah, this sounds like we're pulling from the philosophy of Last Thursdayism.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that religion? For those not known at home, it's a belief that the world was created last Thursday, and the whole universe was created last Thursday, and it's completely impossible to disprove, because it theoretically could be the case. The whole world could have been created like 2 seconds ago, and just all this stuff existed.
There's problems with that.
There's a lot of problems with that, but it's still no way to disprove it. All right, well... Let's jump on in into our topic du jour, if you will, hell houses.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, this is a thorny one for us. And before we go off, you know, half-cocked, because that's not a fun way to go off.
That's what we usually do on this show. We do a little bit of research and a lot of it of thinking.
And yes, a lot of bit of chatting before we come in here. And, yeah. But, excuse me. Mm-hmm. We do want to say we've only been to one.
Yes. It was a small one. It's at the local mega church.
Yeah. No, it wasn't that small. It was a good 8 rooms.
Yeah. Well, I would say it was 8 rooms. I wouldn't say it was a good 8 rooms.
I was talking good in terms of... Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, we actually...
Basically, it was a couple of outdoor wedding tents put together.
And this is true. And this is something that frustrated me doing my research on this. Mm-hmm. If you search for this church, the Believer's Life Family Church, and Hell House, no matter what you put after it, our review is number one in Google. I'm sitting there like, Believer's Life Family Church Hell House attendance. Oh, it's us again.
That's pretty funny.
Conversions, new people. It's like, there we are, top every time. And it's like, God damn it, Google. I'm being specific here.
Yeah.
This is
we're trying to find things that aren't us.
Yeah. Contrary to popular belief, I'm not that egotistical that I need to see myself. Oh, shut up. Don't give me... I'm glad this is not a video podcast right now. The look I just got. Anyway, so what is a hell house is the first question. Because we have to kind of... define this.
Right, because a lot of people don't even know about its existence.
Yeah, and the thing is this. There are plenty of Christians in the haunted attraction industry.
Yeah.
They're all over the place. Many of them run at haunted attractions.
Right.
And many of them put Christian themes into their haunted attractions. But they're not hell houses.
Right.
They're haunted attractions with Christian themes. You have to find that dividing line.
Yes, and there is a... There are big differences between
agreed.
The two types of attractions.
And I looked up some good online definitions to help us through this. First requirement is that it is put on by a Christian church or parachurch organization. I love that word, parachurch organization.
Yeah, but it sounds like parachute.
That would be awesome, too. A parachute organization putting on a haunted house would be great.
I just think that they could have called it an umbrella corporation.
But basically, it's either put on by a church or an organization representing a bunch of churches.
Yeah.
It is a hell house that typically has the intent to scare the patrons, similar to a haunted attraction, but it is done with the intent of both to raise money for the church and to convert/save visitors. It is...
Right. There are not... It's not... like jump startles and things like that. That's not their method for scaring. That's a big difference.
Now, sometimes, and this is something I found interesting, I didn't even know the existence of this type. Sometimes they're also referred to as judgment houses. However, judgment houses, at least according to the... Because we're going to get down below when we're talking about how these things really come about and how these operate. There's a company that sells judgment house kits. They claim that their version of the Hell House and the whole thing is more about eliciting, you know, not fear, but other emotions, i.e. sadness. You know, guilt people into converting and make them sad. And they steer away from a lot of the themes and ideas that Hell Houses are really well known for.
Right.
So, how is a Hell House different? Well, the first thing is, and this is something we haven't really seen in our industry since the JC haunts.
Yeah.
They're guided tour haunts.
They are, and they are definitely, you get to a scene, the scene acts out, and then you're led into the next scene.
Yes.
And that's what we're talking about here.
And haunted attractions don't, most haunted attractions don't do that because, you know, throughput.
Yes, throughput, if you couldn't understand
throughput
that.
Throughput is absolutely.
Mr. Mumbles over there.
Throughput is atrocious, though I say that. And, of course, we're going to be talking about a haunted attraction, a Hell House, rather, that puts through 19,000 people a year. So,
yes, think about that number for a minute. Did you get a little sad? I got a little sad.
I got a lot of it sad. They use these guided tours. And it's like you said, you go to a room, you stand usually to a side, a scene plays out. When the scene finishes, you're ushered into the next room and repeat.
Yeah.
Lather, rinse, repeat. The scenes usually feature sinners dying unexpectedly.
Yeah.
Some of the common tropes include abortion sequences, suicide, family violence, terrorism, drinking, drugs, homosexuality, AIDS, as well as the tortures of hell.
Yeah.
We have seen, like the one we went had a suicide room.
Yes.
Had a the car. World's worst EMT.
Yes, in the car accident.
In the car accident.
Which is from drunk driving.
Which was a drunk driving one. And we did have a terrorism one in ours, I recall.
Yes, there was a terrorism one, too.
But, so, yeah. And
a drug one.
Yeah, there was a drug one.
Yeah.
And so, if you can't tell, these are topics that most haunted attractions usually steer way, way clear of.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons.
Unless you're trying specifically to offend.
Yeah.
Or elicit that kind of response.
And the scenes tend to be very, very graphic.
Yes.
They will be include graphic scenes of simulated violence, and not simulated violence in the way that like we think of simulated violence.
Right.
Because we like, yeah, totally have Pinhead whip the girl open and pull the intestines out. Like,
yeah, yeah, no.
No, this is like actual human like murders, and
this is pull a girl up and actually slap her around because that's how you pretended to do it.
Or shooting someone nearly point blank with hopefully blanks in the gun.
Yeah, using real guns.
Using real guns. Things like that. Also, fake hangings, though I would not call the fake hanging at the Hell House we attended very accurate.
That's because you're a little bit taller than I am. From my perspective, I couldn't see what you saw. And yeah. So it looked like he could slip at any moment and actually kill himself accidentally.
Yeah, I mean, because every time I see a hanging scene in a haunt, I think every haunter has this exact same recoil here. There's been too many goddamn stories over the years of people actually dying doing hanging sequences.
Right.
I mean, there's a right way and a wrong way to do this, and too many people do it the wrong way. And in the hanging sequence, the guy puts a noose around his neck, and he says his lines, and he seems like he jumps off, but if you were my height, I'm about 6 feet even. You're only a couple inches shorter than me, though. You're
yeah.
a tall drink of water in your own right, but
I had people in front of me.
That's probably also part of it. He jumped onto a platform box behind a couch
that
made it. It was partially.
Yeah, I couldn't see behind the couch.
I could see behind.
And you could.
I could see behind. And also, it didn't help that I think the noose itself was made of the loosest bungee cord in the history of bungee cord.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still bad.
But still, hanging sequences are so dangerous, and there's almost no reason to do it. I mean,
right. Not recommended.
Yeah, this is one of those side conversations we get into. We've seen it
done once really, really well.
Yeah, but that's the problem, is the dangers of actually hanging yourselves really high, and to everyone watching it, it looks fake.
Yeah.
No one actually believes it.
Yeah.
And it's really dangerous. It's the worst of both worlds.
Yeah.
Anyway. Usually the theme within Hell Houses is some of the sinners repent and are saved.
Right.
And toward the end of the Hell House, they go to heaven, and the others who either are unable to or choose not to, go to hell.
Right.
That's so, where we get the name Hell House.
Yes. So, for an example of this, the car sequence that we saw, the car crash. There were two occupants in this car crash. One,
both conveniently ejected from the vehicle through the process of rolling out of it.
Yes.
Very convenient for him.
So one guy was kind of groaning, and then the girl was more lively, and the EMT was like, oh, well, there's nothing I can do for your friend. I'm not even going to look at him.
No, nope, he's screwed.
So why don't you go ahead and pray for forgiveness now so that you can go to heaven?
Yeah, I don't think he treated a single thing on her.
No. Nope.
Just
not important.
Gave her the get saved talk. Which, yeah. I mean, that would get you fired so quickly.
Yeah.
EMT, I'm sorry.
So basically she went to heaven and he her went friend to went to hell.
Yeah. Hell Houses usually conclude, as did the one we attended, with some kind of pitch to join the church. A vision of heaven plus a pitch to join the church.
Yes. And in this case, a long freaking video, including scenes from
Passion of the Christ.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I couldn't remember it. I hadn't watched it.
Yeah, And the whole point of this, remember, is to get new commitments to the church.
Right.
They want to get new members. This is how they're expanding their roles.
They're trying to scare you. They're trying to put the fear of God into you.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to do.
That's the MO. Now, the thing I found interesting, and I've been doing a lot of research on Hell Houses leading up to this.
Right.
Every Hell House I've researched had a level of quality that was akin to what I would think of as a charity haunt.
Right.
Even the one that we're going to get to in just a minute, that has 19,000 people, has been around since the late 70s, even they, raking in over $190,000 per year in this haunt.
Oh my God.
Still have very, very low standards of production.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons for that is they tend to be extremely actor intensive.
Yes.
As I said, there are multiple scenes that are acted out in sequence, and each scene has multiple actors. So just do the quick math. If you have 8 scenes and 6 actors per scene.
Yeah.
Let's do easier math. There's 8 actors per scene. I just realized I totally blanked on 8 times 6 is. Holy crap. But I know 8 times 8 is 64. I remember that one. 64 actors.
48.
Thank you. That's 48 actors. And that would be a pretty sparse
house. That's for a small one. The one that we're getting to, didn't they have 100?
Yeah, 120.
120. Like, which, you know, is basically a lot of the youth straight out of the megachurch that puts it on.
Yeah, the mega church there has a school.
Yeah.
A high school that they run, and they get a lot of the students participating in it.
Right. It's like their drama club.
Oh, it's a very weird drama club.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I mean, these are reasons why, and of course, the reason I talk about all this is because a lot of haunted attractions are, I know someone out there, because we know that a lot of people listening to this podcast and a lot of people interested in haunted attractions are not haunters yet.
Right.
Hi, guys. Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Nice to you. And I know what some of them are probably thinking right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is, wow, if these houses are good enough to scare people to Jesus, this format's got to be good enough for us to run a business. And the answer is no. They're not effective business haunts typically because of the throughput issues.
Right.
And because of the heavy actor intensive issues.
Right.
It's just not most practical.
Yeah, you can't take a Hell House and turn it into a haunted house.
Not a mainstream major one, especially.
No.
It just doesn't work.
Can't do the throughput, and as a lot of people will tell you, finding actors is really hard.
Yeah, if you don't have that ready-made, and that's one thing, one advantage these Hell Houses have, is since they're connected to churches, and often church schools, they have a ready pool of volunteers.
Right.
If you don't have that, my advice is start finding ways to limit the number of actors you need while still making it feel actor-intensive.
Right.
I mean, and every actor in our haunt pretty much does two roles.
Yeah.
For example. You can't do that in a Hell House.
No.
You might be able to have one actor work two scenes.
Well, actually, now we've got enough actors inside that we aren't doing that as much as we were.
Yeah, we should be doing it, though.
In the beginning, there was, well, we need a bigger space.
Okay, so let's talk about the history of Hell Houses. This is the next topic I really want to hit on. And I pulled a lot of this information from religioustolerance.org. Not the most unbiased source on Hell Houses.
Right.
They actually likened Hell Houses to hate speech.
Yeah. But I can see that.
I can see why. I mean, it's one of those you're not wrong moments in some ways. Some Hell Houses especially. Some more than others, I'm going to assume. But the earliest Hell House, now there's actually a lot of debate about what the earliest Hell House is. No mm-hmm. one seems to really know, and apparently there were a lot of similar productions going around this time. But the earliest one that seems to have some credibility,
and is definitely still around,
yeah, is the Trinity Assembly of God in Cedar Hill, Texas. That's near Dallas.
Right.
Are you familiar with Cedar Hill? Didn't you live in Dallas for like a minute?
Yeah, I lived in Dallas for a minute. Cedar Hill sounds kind of familiar, but I can't say I've been there.
It's a Dallas area.
I cannot confirm nor deny.
It was it was popularized by Jerry Falwell in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also featured in the documentary we're going to get to in just a split second here.
Right.
However, Hell Houses remained a fairly isolated thing.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't really blossom nationwide, and it's kind of fascinating how this works. Because in 1992, the concept was picked up by a Reverend Kenan Roberts, who opened one in Roswell, New Mexico, to which I'm thinking, A, there are human beings in Roswell? I thought it was all aliens.
Yeah.
A, that floors me a little bit. I'm sorry, it just kind of does. And B, really? Roswell? Okay, what else? You know, I mean, you do you, man. You do you. But then he began to sell the Hell House Outreach Kits. That was an embarrassing typo in the show notes. I've written it. Sold Hell House Outreach Kids. Which,
well, that's kind of the same thing.
It sounds a lot worse. Now, these kits were about $199 at the time. They've gone up in price over the years. But they include a 263-page manual,
yeah,
including several of the stock room types, how to build it, everything from construction to room types, how to recruit actors, how to train actors, all that jazz, and I kid you not, a special effects CD. This CD includes the voice of God, the voice of Satan.
I'm actually very curious
about
the manual.
I want this CD, too.
I'm curious about the manual and the CD, but so, if anyone has one of these laying around that they want to throw our way, yeah, let us know.
Yeah, let us know. I could not find where to buy it today. So it yeah. seems like sometime between when this was last reported on, like in the late 2000s, to today, went off the market.
Right.
But however, you can right now, like I said, buy the Judgment House kit if you are so inclined.
You will be judged.
You'll be judged by Judy.
I was thinking Dread.
Okay. But, yes. But that kit is what really sent this going. Because now yeah. there was a blueprint, there was a plan. And we actually saw this in the mainstream haunt industry.
Yes. That's what I was thinking.
This is exactly how it grew.
Yeah.
Because we had the JC haunts, 70s and 80s. They started around the same time as the Hell Houses.
Right.
But the JCs, being much better organized, apparently, started distributing those kits earlier, those kits and guides.
Yeah.
And then those guides led to other guides, and then once you have that template,
you can build an industry.
You can build an industry around it, and that's kind of, I mean, it's interesting, and I think this is a lesson. The haunt industry needs these types of books, basically.
Yeah.
We need this type of literature, because without it, we apparently don't... It's like the dirt that the raindrop forms around, in a weird way.
Right. Well, and I mean, we used to have a lot of these kind of things and demonstrations and the Haunted Attraction magazine that was put out for a while.
I think they're coming... They're back out now.
Yeah.
They're back out in print.
That's right, they are. That just happened.
Yeah, it just happened. But, probably should have mentioned that in the podcast at some point.
Probably.
We're still getting the feel for a lot of this. I'm sorry. We're it's one of the reasons why we haven't been too active with the promotion.
Yeah, but no, there were, you know, drawings for plans and the different grid layouts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, which is important.
But once you've got those cultural touchstones, you can build an industry around it, like you said.
Yeah.
You've got a guide. You have a how-to manual. And it covers everything you need to know. People can take the football and run with it, and they can do it all over the country.
No, make their own.
And that's exactly what happened. So that caused the whole industry to ramp up.
Right.
Then in 2004, Robert said it was being used by more than 500 churches in 14 countries. Going back to the international thing.
It's kind of sad that there are more hell houses in other countries than haunted houses. Well, at least it seems that way. It may not be true. Yeah. That may not be true.
I probably
should fact check that.
Now, the industry was popularized anew in 2001, 2002, depending upon which release date you're looking at.
Yeah, the Hell House industry.
By the Hell House industry. By George Ratliff's documentary, Hell House, which coincidentally was about the Trinity Assembly of God, Hell House in Cedar Hill, Texas.
Right, and it followed the construction and the season of it.
Yeah.
So we just watched this last night.
Yeah, I'd seen it right after it came out at some point. I saw it.
Apparently, I didn't just like wiped it from memory.
I don't think there's a way you couldn't have if I saw it.
Yeah.
But then again, I don't remember eating at Spud Spot, and apparently you do. So we're one and one today.
I can see why I would have wiped this out of my memory, though.
It's a documentary, and here's the thing. A lot of people criticize this documentary for not challenging the statements and the faith of it, but that's not what a documentary does in this case.
That's exactly what I was thinking. They're just showing you what happens, you know? They're like the prime directive from...
Yeah, they're just observers.
You're just observers. You're not supposed to interfere. Not that that ever stopped the crew, but...
You know, I mean, this wasn't a Michael Moore-style documentary, basically, where they were trying to do a teardown.
No, they were just trying to show what happened, what the thinking was behind these...
And what they believed.
The people who put it on.
And because here's the thing. We can lampoon these people if we want. They genuinely believe everything they're saying. They are sincere in their beliefs.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I don't feel like they needed to be lampooned or challenged in this movie. It was interesting to see and to observe it.
Yeah. And they did get challenged by the goers.
Some of the attendees, yeah.
Some of the attendees towards the end did ask some questions. And, it's actually a very disturbing documentary.
Yeah. And it's the scene I found most interesting to me in a very bizarre way was when they were in the meeting room talking about ideas for all the different rooms.
Right.
They were going to have all the different scenes. And someone said, oh yeah, we should do this gay scene and do this and that. And they shot it down because they didn't say it outright, but they were afraid that the playing gay might turn their actors gay.
Right, because they said, well, you're going to have to rehearse this and, like, work it out over several months, and you're going to be spending a lot of time together, so we're just not going to do that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it basically... it wasn't spoken directly, but that seemed to be the fear.
Right.
That's
exactly what it sounded like.
So, yeah, it's actually... I actually really recommend the documentary.
Yeah, that way you can find your own conclusions and you don't actually have to go to a Hell House to see what one's about.
And that's the thing. The reason we've been only to one is not because we're opposed to going to Hell Houses. In my book, I'll go to them, attend them, and review them as I would any other haunted attraction.
Right.
That's totally fine. But there just ain't many here.
No.
There's not many in Southeast Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas. And the reason is, this requires evangelical churches with a fair amount of money.
Right.
And that's just not a combination you see a lot in our region.
Yeah.
Other regions, like I hear they're big in St. Louis. We know they're big in West Texas and the Dallas and Houston areas.
Yeah.
So there are definitely areas where they are sort of a big thing. This just isn't one of them.
Right.
And that we were, like, if you go back to previous episode, we were convinced the Revelation was a Hell House.
Yeah.
Right up until the moment we walked to the front door.
Yep.
Right, which church are you guys with? And, yeah. But, so, yeah, I mean, that's how little of a thing it is. So, anyways. Hell Houses are pretty gosh darn controversial.
No kidding.
They
should be controversial.
They should
though.
Be, I agree. One of the things that they get a lot of flack for is they're accused of spreading misinformation a lot. In particular, and this we saw this both in the documentary and in the Hell House we went to, falsehoods about AIDS, abortion, sexual orientation, drinking, drugs, and also other religions.
And rape.
And rape too, yes.
Because that was really big. Really big on the victim blaming in that documentary.
Yeah, that was. Not kidding. And also, I would also throw in mental illness and depression.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of victim blaming there, too, on issues of suicide.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. So that's difficult, too. These Hell Houses are all about displaying absolute worst-case scenarios that probably only exist in the imagination of the people creating the Hell House.
Yeah, I'm actually still really mad about the rave scene suicide thing.
Okay, well, don't tell me about it.
Well,
then I'm your therapist.
All right, fine. Well, basically, they had this girl at a rave, and she took, this guy came up and said, "Hey, you want to try this?" and put some drugs in her drink, and she drank it.
Because
that's what everybody does at a rave.
Here, let me just drop this unnamed substance in your cup.
So then, she gets gang raped. She goes home, and she is going to commit suicide by slashing her wrist. And as she's battling it out with herself, the demon character is talking about her. You know, well, you know, she let herself have sex with all of these guys, and can you really expect anything better from someone who sleeps with her father? And I'm like, wait a minute. You don't choose.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be assaulted by your dad.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It just, you might want to move on, because that scene is just infuriating.
Yeah, But that's exactly the kind of thing that Hell Houses do, is they really like to pitch these terrible scenarios. Like, I remember one Hell House, a guy chose to be gay.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, there's some issues here.
Right.
And had a gay relationship, and then ended badly, and he killed himself.
Yeah.
Okay, there's like so much wrong there to unpack, but you know, sexuality, say what you want, it's not a choice.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, if you want to see all of the stuff that really just grinds my gears, from that documentary, just watch it. You'll understand. Oh my God.
Yeah, it is very frustrating. It's a very difficult show to watch. I mean, and it's like we said, we're not coming at this from any particular religious belief.
Yeah, but, I'm trying to keep all of that out
of this. I get it, and it's tough, but at the same time, it's very offensive to large numbers of groups.
Right.
Different, I mean, and like, basically they accused all Wiccans and pagans of being, and one hell house of being, you know, baby murderers and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I know a bunch of Wiccans. The worst thing I'd say about them is some of them talk to plants, and it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's a little weird, but it's they definitely aren't
it's
baby
murderers. It's their thing.
It's their thing. They're definitely not baby murderers, though.
Yes, if there were, we would hear about it on the news every,
all the time.
Week.
You know, and many of them still, of course, jump on the satanic panic, which in most honest parts of society died out in the early 90s.
Yeah.
So, but the part about it that really upset me, and this goes back to our ethics talk
right.
in the previous go-around.
And I agree with this.
Headline jumping is what I call it.
Yep.
The reason that Hell House that got the attention of that director was because mere months after the Columbine shooting, they had a Columbine scene.
Yep.
Now, we sat here 2 weeks ago in this very room wondering when the expiration date on real life tragedies was, and talking about, you know, Rob Zombie doing a Jeffrey Dahmer room and, you know, a John Wayne Gacy room and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did it within months.
Yeah, like September, October.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they had to redo the room to make it a Columbine one.
Yeah.
It was so quick.
And they've also done one on Sandy Hook.
Yeah, they did one the same year of Sandy Hook.
And that's just inconceivably
poor taste.
Yeah. Poor taste and just unsympathetic to anybody.
Yeah, I don't get that. And they regularly feature like 9/11 rooms. 9/11 rooms and other simulated terrorist attacks. There was a simulated terrorist attack in the one we... It wasn't a 9/11 room. It was a more generic...
Yeah.
Simulated terrorist attack. But of course, they had to bring the Muslim thing into it because...
They did. And they had, you know, people in New Orleans Saints shirts, actually. Sorry, Saints, for associating you with that. But they did it first. Yeah, they were being held hostage.
We love you, Saints. It's those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's those guys, don't they? We're cool with the Saints.
Yeah. We don't think they're affiliated with the Hell House locally in any way, shape, or form.
Be nice to the Saints fans.
But anyway, they were being held hostage by the terrorist. And, you know, wound up not... Let's see, the terrorists were trying to get them to convert to their religion, weren't they?
Yes, that was...
And then they wouldn't.
Yeah.
And so then they were shot and went to heaven.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that makes a Hell House, is they jump on real-life tragedies almost the minute they happen. Still,
yes.
I'm still in awe of the Columbine and Sandy Hook rooms.
You know, talking about this, I'm surprised that there wasn't a hurricane one in the one we went to.
That's a very good point. There was no Katrina room.
Maybe that was too far for them, even.
Yeah, maybe it was just
maybe they didn't think about it.
Yeah, don't give them ideas.
Sorry.
Well,
then it's hard to, you know, simulate a hurricane in one of those at their budget.
Well, you can fill a tank with water. And then don't give him ideas, Jonathan.
You can have all the actors come out and spray the audience with water bottles.
Build like a tub and have them like build like a roof. I don't know. I don't want to go any further with the idea because I don't want to give it to them.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
But the other criticism is that these attractions are marketed very heavily to young children. And they are widely considered to be far too graphic and far too intense for them. Multiple news accounts of the one in Cedar Hill, Texas, has children leaving and throwing up right outside.
Yeah. I mean, they're shown in the documentary. They're horrified, and they should be. But that shouldn't... I don't see how this is supposed to work. And I don't see how parents of really young kids will take them.
Yeah, but they do.
I know. They do.
And we saw them in line at the one we went to.
I know.
Also, hate speech concerns. We've already touched on that a lot. Mm-hmm. Basically, they say a lot of things against LGBT, against other faiths, Wiccan, pagan, Muslim, etc.
Yeah, we're probably going to blow through the last part of this because we're running out of time, and apparently we're pretty heated.
Yeah. And they, and the final thing is that I wanted to mention is that, and this is just to be completely clear, this criticism comes from both, you know, the secular and the religious community.
Yeah.
Many, many, many churches hate the concept of a hell house and don't understand it.
Right.
And like one of the groups actually very aggressive against it was the Colorado Council of Churches.
No.
They've released statements condemning hell houses. So as the human rights campaigns for quote unquote demonizing LGBT community.
Yeah.
So yeah, they have taken a lot of flack within and out of the religious community.
Yeah, and not only that, but as we saw from the Yelp review of the one locally, the one star Yelp review, wasn't because of anything like that. It was because they were aligning themselves with the devil to put on a hell house.
Yeah, I found that interesting.
There you go.
You know,
you take that information, you do with it what you want.
Yeah, I hear
but
you, man.
There are some Christians that also think of it that way.
Yes.
And
There's no unified lens of looking at these through is the thing.
Right.
But, you know, at the same time, but we say all this, hell houses in my book are still a kind of haunted attraction. It's a very bizarre kin to it, but I still think of it as such. Now, the question is this, are hell houses, and I'm going to just ask questions here and we'll discuss the answer.
Uh-huh.
So I'll ask, you'll say something, and then I'll say something smart, then you'll say something smart, and we'll have a conversation.
Uh-huh.
You ready?
That's how conversations work.
Yeah, hopefully. Are hell houses competitors to haunted attractions?
I don't believe so.
You don't think so?
Nope.
So you don't think that someone might have thrown $10 to go to the hell house, and the believer's life went up the road, instead of going to House of Shock or something?
No, House of Shock is more.
But you know what I mean.
No, I know what you mean, but I don't think so.
Okay, so
I think it's a different audience.
Well, and that is one of the things.
I think the only people who are going to go to hell houses that also are, you know, we went because we're haunter enthusiasts. We're haunted house enthusiasts, and this seems haunt adjacent.
Well, and then we both had a lot of curiosity about hell houses.
Yeah. I knew of the concept. You remember the documentary. So we were curious.
I'm not sure how you scrubbed it out of your memory, because the timeline was...
I'm really good at that when I want
to
be.
At the timeline of when I had to have seen it, you had to have been in my life. So there's
yes.
no way I went alone.
Yes. But, yeah, so, you know, I don't think that it's a direct competitor.
Okay. And I tend to agree, and one of the reasons I tend to agree... And it's something I want to talk about a little bit lower down, too. Hell houses tend to advertise very differently than regular haunted attractions.
Yeah.
They tend to advertise in religious publications, on Christian radio stations. They tend, and that's a very interesting point for something we're getting to later, but they don't advertise on the same channels and the same wavelength as other haunted attractions.
Right. The only reason we knew about it was because they had a billboard on their church.
And a big flipping snipe sign.
Yeah.
At one of the busier intersections nearby.
Yep.
Okay. Let's try this. What can haunted attractions learn from hell houses, if anything? I feel the need to add the if anything.
Yeah, I know. If you've got something,
okay,
go ahead.
I'll
because
start
I can't think of anything.
You know, one thing I do find very impressive, especially about after watching that documentary, as a haunter, I'm genuinely impressed that that hell house, with that setup, put 19,000 people through. Now, yes, that means they're doing groups of 30, which are pretty big groups for scene-based haunts like this.
Yeah, it's huge.
But that still requires an amazing pace to
yeah.
keep this going, especially on the busier nights. So there's definitely a lot to be learned about on throughput, keeping it cranking, and keeping the haunt going consistently. Because they have a lot of actors, they have a lot of scenes. It's a complex mess to run, and...
You know, we're going to have to do a whole show on throughput, because I don't agree that that's a good way for a haunted house to do it.
Oh, I don't think it's a good way for a haunted house to do
okay.
it.
Okay.
I'm not saying do that tight setup, but I'm saying if they can do 19,000 with that setup, with that handicap, there's obviously some lessons about throughput.
I don't know if it's a handicap whenever you put that many people into a room at a time.
True.
I think that that's where the difference is made up.
Okay.
And one of the things that I did like about the documentary was that they did extensive, interviews.
Yeah.
They casting calls.
Yeah.
And they held.
Oh yeah, I did really enjoy the audition process.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. My brain was not coming up with the right word. Yes, but they held extensive auditions multiple days, for multiple parts. And they were able to really see where their actors would fit in best.
Yeah, definitely there is something to learn there about auditioning actors, yeah. too, and finding roles that suit them. Hell houses are good. And also, I think the final thing, all haunted attractions say this, but I think hell houses really live this. They are masters at making something out of nothing. The average budget of a hell house is negligible.
Yeah.
And they find a way to make an attraction work out of it.
The thing is that they don't, it doesn't look like from the one that we went to or the other one that was featured in the film, that they adhere to the same fire codes.
They probably do not.
So I don't know how valid that is.
Fair enough. What could hell houses learn from haunted attractions?
I don't want them to learn anything. I want them to keep failing as much as possible. Sorry. I know that's a biased answer, but...
Signed, Crystal Ramey.
Yes, yes.
Screw
that's
you.
That's my opinion.
Okay. Well, I'm going to...
Because they can learn a hell of a lot, but I'm not going to tell them what it is.
Well, my biggest question is why on earth are hell houses not free roam? Are we to believe they couldn't deliver an effective message, tell an effective story in a free roam haunt?
I don't know.
I'm just asking.
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, the reason I ask this is because, I mean, as an attraction, and we have to think about it in terms of being an attraction.
Yeah, I suppose.
They would have a lot of benefits from being free roam. Higher throughput, fewer actors needed. They would benefit from it, and they could still convey their message, most likely. Other haunts have found great... We've seen some great storytelling in haunted attractions.
Well, I think that it might actually kill their throughput, because they wouldn't have control. I think that that's what it is that they like the control of being able to time everything down to the second.
And saying, okay... You're here, you're staring at this scene. We are judging exactly what you look at.
Yeah, instead of letting people just roam around.
Because, you know, you and I, we Mr. Magoo our way through haunt sometimes, looking at other random crap than what we're supposed to.
Well, yeah.
That's because we're haunters.
I mean,
it's really bad, because we'll go into a room and there'll be an actor trying to scare us, and we're going, wow, this panel construction is really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, you were trying to scare us.
Yeah.
I'm very sorry.
Where's the actor run? Can you see it? Where is it? There it is!
All right. But, we got a few minutes left. Are hell houses effective? Financially and or spiritually? And this is one of the areas where I stepped into a little controversy talking about it with our friends earlier. Ellie and especially Ellie, because I believe, and my understanding is that hell houses are both a fundraiser and an attempt to convert.
Yes.
To save / convert.
Going to one and watching that, I believe that is the point of it.
But others, including Ellie, believe that the financial aspect doesn't matter. But I do not believe that. I believe that it does matter very, very much. And maybe that is the cynicism of Jonathan seeping in, and the fact that I've been a haunter for too damn long for my own health and own good.
No, I think it's...
But
I think a large portion of it's about the money.
But that brings the question, are they successful in those two regards?
I think that they make back their money in spades.
Okay.
Because not only do they have a congregation that will support them and come out and
bring people in it, yeah.
But they'll also come and visit it and bring people, like you said. So I think financially, they're making back what they put in.
Okay. But what about in terms of spiritually, in terms of converting people?
And you'd I'll have say to this. Ask somebody else.
I'll say this, and this is where I don't even think asking somebody else helps.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know when the Hell House local one finished, they said they'd gotten, I tried to look it up, I tried to find the page where they said it, I couldn't, that they had gotten an X number of new members to the church.
Yeah.
And X new dedications because of the Hell House.
Yeah.
Now, I believe they did get a lot of dedications. It's an intent.
So do you think it's 5% of the people that went through?
It's hard for me to put a percentage on it. If the night we went was typical,
yeah,
maybe with a slight tick up toward the end of season, it sounded like it was, I would say, 10 to 15-ish percent, be my best guess.
Wow.
Which, okay, but here's the thing, and here's my point. I can believe that, because as we discussed just a minute ago, marketing for Hell House is done heavily through already Christian channels.
Right.
It's
so are they trying to get them to go to their church instead of other churches?
Exactly. That's why I think it's one of the bids. I think that's one of the things they're saying. But the other question I have is, okay, you've got these new sign-ups. How long do they stick around?
Yeah.
That's an important question that I don't think anyone has the answer to.
No.
And the reason is I don't think anyone's tracking the data on this.
Yeah.
Because the thing is this. Say you get 50 new members from a Hell House.
Right.
If 49 of them leave after a month, is it really successful?
Yeah. Well, and see, here's one of the things that I think of. Is that the Believer's Life, that's the name of it right down the street. They hold other events that are open to the public that aren't necessarily meant to convert people.
Yeah, they have a fair going on right now that we're kind of missing to do this podcast.
Yes. Yeah, they've got a fair with a Ferris wheel and everything, and you go and you eat funnel cakes and, you know, do right.
They're called elephant ears. Okay. From South Carolina, they're elephant ears until I die.
Okay, fine. But they also, at their church, hold giant...
Saints parties.
Saints parties where they watch the game and they have date nights so that parents can go out and they leave their kids there all night for a fee. So they seem like the type of church that would, there's a difference in the churches locally.
Yeah.
You know, there's one that you just go there to worship, and then there's one like this that obviously is trying to bring in the community for more events.
Yeah, they're being more of a community center.
Right. That's what I'm
saying. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think Hell Houses are definitely making money. I think that's one of the key reasons why they keep growing. It's a successful fundraiser. It's good promotion. It gets news coverage. It gets attention. But as far as winning converts, I mean, I'm sitting here. I'm the target.
Yeah. And
we have to bring our faith into this a little bit, or lack thereof.
Yeah.
You know, we're the target here. We're secular individuals who don't attend church.
No.
And we're the target, right?
Yep.
This did nothing to convince me. If anything, it angered me and pushed me away.
Yeah. And I think that the people who convert to their church are the people who they're already preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
They're not the people who, you know, in their mind would actually need it.
Yeah.
So I think it fails on that point.
I think most likely it does, but as long as it remains a financial success, and even if it only converts a couple of people,
well,
then it's going to be a success and it's going to continue to grow.
Yeah, and the only people that it might convert that aren't already part of the church
mm-hmm.
are those little kids.
Yeah.
Who are basically, you know, I see this as a form of torture for them. I really do.
I can't find much to disagree with it. So, you know, if you couldn't tell, I guess the cat's out of the bag now. We're not really fans of Hell Houses.
Yep.
And the concept of them, but, you know, it's nothing to do with a specific faith. It's just the message they're preaching is not one we align ourselves with.
No.
Well, that's, I think, all we have on this. Any final thoughts?
If you like conversations like this, let us know. You can reach us at
well, you can find us on Facebook at Haunt Weekly or on Twitter at Haunt Weekly. Either way, just reach out to us, send us a message, send us a tweet. Love to hear from you. Love to hear your thoughts. Also, comments on our post at hauntweekly.com are very much welcome. Tell your friends, subscribe, iTunes and Stitcher. We're on all the things. Yep. And, yeah, tell your buddies, and we will see you guys
next week.